Well, I think historically we tended to almost overstate how Catholic the Rising was. We made it out to be, in the decades after the Rising, was made out to be a purely Catholic enterprise. The rebel leaders tended to be painted as kind of plaster saints. They were the most perfect models of Catholicism you could imagine. We've gone to another extreme now. We've tended to play that down altogether. If you think about the Rising nowadays, we rightly kind of pick up on things that were neglected in the past, like the role of women in the Rising, the role of various leftish movements in the Rising. But we've managed to paint fringe elements, like the leftish thing, as being the absolute core of the movement. The Rising was an overwhelmingly Catholic enterprise. If you look at Rebellion on television, for instance, the RTE show, they are recognizing that religion was there, that it was important to it, but it comes across as something kind of weird and cultish in it. Whereas if you go back and you look at the archives, the military archives that we've got, where thousands of people were interviewed about their roles in the Rising and the War of Independence, what you see is that religion was an utterly normal part of life for everybody there. It was simply what they did. It was a very Catholic enterprise. It was a very Catholic country. And I think we've forgotten that.
And why do you think we're forgetting that? Is there a conspiracy here, or is it just that it's so alien to us maybe in the society that we live in now that we can't really relate to it?
I definitely wouldn't call it conspiracy. I don't think that's a particularly realistic way of looking at it. I think we've just shifted away. It's a cultural, I suppose, a cultural atmosphere that's different nowadays. Ireland was overwhelmingly Catholic then. It isn't now. And it's not even like if you go to England, for instance, where Catholicism is seen as something kind of odd. And because it's seen as odd, people have a certain interest in it. Here it's not seen as odd in that way. It's not seen as something to be kind of identified and examined and all of that. It's just seen as it was the wallpaper of the past, if you like, and we've got new wallpaper now. But in doing so, we forget the reality of how things were.
I mean, how important, you say that religion was part of people's everyday life and it was part of the Rising. In what sense did it play a role? I mean, was it a Catholic uprising in the sense of that the oppressors were of a different religion and we're rising up against that? Was that the role? Or was it a Catholic justice movement? How would you see religion infiltrating into the Rising, or how did it play a role in the Rising?
I think the faith and fatherland is a cliche. It's not quite the case that the two things were the same. But the national movement for independence and the whole concept of Catholic emancipation had become interwoven over the course of the 18th and 19th centuries, such that anybody who was a nationalist in early 20th century Ireland was a nationalist who had grown up with kind of an understanding of a whole series of wrongs against the Irish people who were generally seen as wrongs against the Catholic Irish people. So they were bound together in that regard. And you'll regularly find people at the time talking about Oliver Plunkett comes up a lot, the Mass Rocks come up a lot, Cromwell, all these things are deeply embedded in the Irish mind at the time and in the mind of the rebels. So that's a key aspect of it. You also have the polarisation that happened with the Home Rule issue, where most Irish people have been in favour of a kind of devolution autonomy within the UK. This has been strongly opposed in what became Northern Ireland, with the Ulster Protestants being afraid that, as they put it, Home Rule will be Rome Rule. The effect of that was that you had a sharper line than before drawn between the two communities in Ireland. So I think that was very much in their mind as well, that the creation of the UVF had inspired the creation of the IVF in the rest of the country. So that was a key aspect of it, that it couldn't help but be seen as a Catholic movement when you already had a Protestant movement. That was pretty clear. But it was, in some ways, it was almost more mundane than that. If you read the archives, if you look at the accounts at the time, this is simply the lives that people lived. You have, just before the Rising, you have people in Cork, Galway, Dublin, Dundalk, Limerick, doesn't really matter where, all of them going to confession the night before the Rising was due to happen, in huge numbers. In some cases, this actually caused the police to worry that something was about to happen. Eamon Kyant had apparently been worried that this would happen, because he'd said that had happened in 1867. That was when, spotting people going to Mass who wouldn't normally go, the police thought something is up. So huge numbers going to confession. Huge numbers going to confession during the Rising. You hear about priests being brought in the forecourts and the GPO, Boland's Mills, wherever, you hear about guys in Marrowbone Lane crying because they haven't been to confession in a while and they're worried that they're facing their death without being reconciled with God. So priests are brought in to do that. You constantly have them reciting the rosary. You have a really bizarre story about in the GPO, a Swedish and a Finnish guy wind up fighting alongside the rebels and doing so because, as far as they're concerned, they know nothing about the Irish struggle except it's a struggle against a big country that might eat Ireland up, because they're neighbours of Russia, which has eaten up their countries to their mind. And the Finn, who doesn't speak any English and isn't a Catholic, apparently by the end of the week could recite the rosary in Irish. So this kind of stuff just shows the extent to which this was happening all the time.
Do you think the rebels, do you think in the rising that people saw it as a holy war almost, that they saw it as a righteous war, in that they were throwing off the shackles, as you say, of a bigger country that was trying to eat up a smaller country?
I think I'd be wary about characterising it as a holy war. I don't think that was the case, because it's a term that has connotations for us now. Nonetheless, they definitely felt God was on their side. You do find this quite often. There's one guy, he's stationed in the South Dublin Union, and he writes in his account about very clearly that, you know, things were going badly, but we weren't that worried because we knew God was on our side in this one. And then he goes off and he has to think, and while thinking away up on a rooftop, he's reciting the whole litany of grievances. He's talking about Mass Rocks and Oliver Plunkett and Robert Emmett and people like that as well. So they very much had that in mind, that this was a just cause, that God was on their side and that they would win. If not then, soon. You know, they hoped if they didn't win on the spot, it would inspire others to kind of emulate them.
Now in the centenary, there's a lot of people who are going to want to commemorate it. There'll be exhibitions, there'll be festivals, there'll be, you know, there'll be a lot of celebration of it. What, to your mind, is the best way to go about doing that, in the sense that we're now part of Europe, so, you know, in a sense we're maybe closer than we ever were before with England, but in another way we also want to celebrate the fact that we got independence from them. So what is the best way to look at it?
I don't know how you'd start, to be honest with you, at this stage. I know the Church of Ireland and the Methodists have already begun with conferences and so forth, with some very impressive academics talking about the rising and different aspects of it. So I think that's certainly one way to go. Definitely more than that is needed. I mean, how you would do it, I'm not exactly sure. One thing that I've discovered is that simply the sheer amount of connections with almost any city centre church between that church and the rising is spectacular. So you could actually have churches upon churches doing individual exhibitions talking about this, highlighting the role of people in the neighbourhood and the churches themselves in the entire revolutionary period. I think that's one thing to do. Things have changed since the 60s when we commemorated the 50th anniversary. That was striking for almost every single civil commemoration of the Rising had a church element in it, whether it be the Archbishop McQuaid blessing the Garden of Remembrance, or just masses of basically every single embassy, stuff like that. That was kind of key. Now, although the official commemorations for the Rising began with a blessing at the grave of O'Donovan Rossa, I think it's unlikely that the church is going to be quite so prominent this time out. But maybe that just falls to people to make more of an effort to recall this. We've grown lazy, I think, in recent decades in terms of thinking constantly of Ireland as church versus state and things like that, forgetting the fact that in both cases, the Irish church and the Irish state are in many respects manifestations of the Irish people. They were that then, and they are that now, albeit to a lesser degree. And I think it's for the Irish people to decide how they're going to do this. But the first step is to remind people. As a step towards this, the Irish Catholic in December did a special issue devoted to the Rising, kind of a prelude to the centenary, in which we looked at all manner of aspects of it, ranging from the faith of the rebels, the role of women in the Rising, to how the church reacted at the time, how the Irish Catholic itself reported on it at the time, to the question of whether or not it counts as a just war, whether it could be considered that way, or whether it's perhaps inappropriate even to apply just war theory to a rebellion like that. The issue went down very well, And we've had a huge amount of interest in it since, of people, kind of teachers, schools, etc., getting in touch with us. So we're currently working on turning it into kind of a more permanent version, modifying it and turning it into a book, which we expect to publish in the next couple of months.